You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring body wash and bar soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
And now, Move the Sticks with Daniel Jeremiah and Bucky Brooks.
All fired up for another episode here of the Move the Sticks podcast. In for DJ, I am Rhett Lewis along with my man Bucky Brooks. And look, you know, I like to start the week, you know, on a positive note here. But man, we do need to send out our heartfelt condolences to the family of Gunther Cunningham, the longtime coach in the NFL. 34 years as a coach in the NFL, the last 8 of which spent with the Detroit Lions. Passed away over the weekend, and just a tremendous impact, I know, to you personally as well, Bucky.
Yeah, tremendous impact on me from a personal standpoint. My story in history with Gunther Cunningham goes back to my days with the Kansas City Chiefs. I was picked up on waivers by the Kansas City Chiefs after playing in Green Bay for parts of 3 seasons, and I made the move from wide receiver to defensive back, and I was still uncertain about how to go about playing defensive back. And during my time with the Kansas City Chiefs under Gunther Cunningham, I not only learned how to play the position, but I learned so much about defensive football, and I learned so much about how to coach and how to lead and the important relationships that you have to have between player and coach. And the one thing that I always remember Gunther talking about was the importance of trust and communication. He said every championship team has to have trust and communication amongst players, amongst coach and player, coach to coach. And he always did that. And he did some things that I thought were unique in terms of not only style of play. We were super aggressive. We blitzed all the time. We played Ryan Leaf when he was a rookie. We blitzed him with the same exact blitz 17 times in a row.
Oh, my God.
Same exact blitz 17 times in a row. And he was relentless when it came to it. Like, I can't curse because I'm not really a cursor, but right. Like when it came to quarterbacks, he used to always talk about, I want to kill him.
Wow.
I want to kill him. I want to blitz him. He talked about blitzing guys that were immobile. You blitz them right up the gut. Guys that are mobile, you blitz them off the edges and make them stay in the pocket. He was a terrific defensive mind, but more importantly, I counted him as a really close friend, because even after we were done and when I was in this part of the business, after scouting and doing TV, I could call Gunther, and Gunther could break down anything for me when it came to the game. So, look, the NFL lost a great one because he's one of the best defensive minds, one of the more colorful personalities. He is a guy that I think everybody has a story when it comes to Gunther, because he felt like he was the toughest guy in the room, and anyone who was around him, anyone who was on his team, had to take on that personality because, look, teams are really, they take on the persona of their coach. And yeah. So having played for him, you walk out with a level of confidence and a level of kind of that bulliness that goes on. So, look, I'm going to miss him. I'm going to miss him dearly. He did so much for Kansas City and the rest of the league, the way he impacted it. It's sad to see a great one pass away.
No question. My dad was working with the Detroit Lions when they hired Jim Schwartz, and Jim hired Gunther Cunningham as his defensive coordinator, and nobody worked harder than Gunther. Nobody spent more time in the office than Gunther Cunningham. And I was reading some quotes here from the Detroit News. Said, he's one of the most aggressive people that I've met. That's what Jim Schwartz said about him. Generally, the people who work with him love him, and the people who work against him hate him.
and he is like, he literally is one of the more aggressive coaches that I've ever been around. In Kansas City, we lived and died with press coverage, a lot of blitzing coming after it. He didn't care. He would tell you that, look, you give up a play, don't worry about it, because we're going to go back and do the same exact thing, so you can't be scared on the island. But I think what we've seen over the last 10 years with the inclusion of analytics and data and numbers and the way people use that information to build game plans, I can tell you back in the mid-90s, Gunther Cunningham was at the forefront of the movement. He was a big believer in data in analytics. He used it. He loved Football Focus when Football Focus kind of rose to prominence. He was a part of that. And so when you talk about guys that are kind of on the front end of the evolution, Gunther Cunningham certainly was on the front end. I think he will be missed by all, but really remembered for what he did for so many.
Good man, good coach, and sad to see him go. Rest in peace. Gunther Cunningham. All right, let's move on to the Seattle Seahawks. And a lot of news, actually. I was on Total Access on Thursday, and it was kind of coming down. You know, we were going to talk about the signing of Ezekiel Ansah and the signing of Jamar Taylor. Ends up later in the day, they come out and officially terminate the contracts of Cam Chancellor and Doug Baldwin. Cam move, we kind of expected, didn't play last year, dealing with the neck injury. Then we find out all the things that Doug Baldwin has been dealing with and the surgeries that he has. And now the tweets that he's put out over the weekend kind of sound like this is the end of the road for his career.
Well, I mean, look, these two guys have been great Seattle Seahawks. They really embody what Pete Carroll was talking about when he was ushering in a culture change in Seattle, when it was all about the competition, when it was win forever, how they competed and really ran that team like a collegiate team where everyone was given an opportunity to earn a role. They talk about competition Tuesdays where Michael Robinson and I have had these conversations where guys would actually compete for positions on Tuesday, almost like a drumline situation where you could challenge the guy who is in the number one position to see if you can take his job, and how Pete would have these 2 and 3 rep competitions where the winner would take the job. And so when you think about Doug Baldwin being an undrafted free agent who rose to prominence, who played at a high level, a Pro Bowl level, was one of the best receivers in the league for a time, I think it's remarkable. And then with Cam Chancellor kind of being the enforcer of the Legion of Boom. And think about how the Legion of Boom and how that secondary impacted the way the fans and really the football world view defensive football. You can't talk about the Legion of Boom without Cam Chancellor. So two great Seahawks, two guys that are I'm sure will see their names in the Ring of Honor. I can understand why both of these guys, as they end their careers, will always be celebrated by the 12s.
These are the players that Mike Mayock was trying to draft for the Oakland Raiders, the foundational players, the icon players that we've been talking about. Baldwin is just a fantastic success story. Undrafted free agent to leading the Seahawks. Not only does he make the team, he leads them in receiving as an undrafted rookie, and then becomes one of the best receivers in the game, and a guy now that is talked about in the same breath as Steve Largent with some of the records up in Seattle. And that is rare air up there. And so now, you know, it's really interesting that more and more of these recognizable Super Bowl era Seahawks names are gone. And all you're really left with now is Russell Wilson and Bobby Wagner. So now that formula is kind of inverted. But I thought Mark Sanchez made a really good point. He was a guest host with us on TA, and he's like, this is how Pete wants it.
Absolutely.
He wants the opportunity to develop these guys into the household names that we're talking about, and feels like they're a better team that way.
So it is funny because when you think about the Seattle Seahawks and when they rose to prominence, they rose because it was all about the competition. It was about the player development. It was about the way that they were able to play as a team and their style of ball. He talks about the style that you could feel. Well, the style that you could feel from the Seahawks when they were at their best, they ran the ball down your throat. They were physical and fast on defense. They turned the ball over, and they were able to win in really kind of like an old-school fashion. I think what's interesting now about the Seattle Seahawks, because everyone would talk about Russell Wilson's contract and being a $30 million man, last year they went back to the formula. They ran the ball more than anybody in football. Yeah. Over 50% of the snaps were rushing attempts. So despite having Russell Wilson, who is viewed as a top-5 quarterback, they still put the ball in the hands of the running back. They still played the way that they needed to play in 2012, 2013, 2014 when they went to Super Bowls and made deep runs. And so Pete Carroll does have what he wants, which is a young developmental squad that can go on a 3-4 year run with a quarterback that is in place that you don't necessarily have to lean on him all the time, but he's there just in case, which is really what you want from a franchise quarterback.
Yeah, he's there. He's making $35 million on average, which is interesting just because if you go back to when they won the Super Bowl, you know who their highest paid player was.
Who was their highest paid player?
Russell Okung at $7 million.
Really? So the formula a bit inverted now as they try to get their way back.
But that's why the draft is always so important. The draft and the undrafted free agent market is always so important. Also, the way that they have been able, when you look at the Seattle Seahawks, one thing they do, they sharp at the bargain basement bin.
Yeah.
They look for former first round players who have been discarded.
That's right.
They kind of shake it up.
That's
right. You saw with the signing of Ziggy Ansah.
Yep. There's
they
another
are
one.
Not afraid to give those guys prove it deals, because when you put people on 1 year deals and they have to prove it, they typically play at their best.
There you go. And Seahawks hoping to get some of that out of LJ Collier, their first round pick this year, DK Metcalf, final pick of the second round. Well, and actually, since we're talking about the rookies, let's continue that conversation here. I mentioned DK Metcalf. Look, I was just watching some of the highlights on the Seattle Seahawks social media channels and liking what I'm seeing from DK out there. Look, I know it's shorts and T-shirts, but that's all we got right now. So that's what we'll do. So what are some other rookies out there that are generating some buzz from what you're hearing, Bucky, during minicamp?
Well, obviously, it has to start with the number one overall pick, Kyler Murray.
K1.
There's a lot of conversation about Kyler Murray and how he's going to mesh and connect with Cliff Kingsbury. We saw him drop passes to some of the new playmakers that they had there, Andy Isabella, Hakeem Butler. I think the big thing we want to see, how quickly can they get him up to speed so he can be the starter on day one? I think that's the expectation. Yep. They can kind of talk about, oh, we don't know. I think when you're the number one overall pick, the expectation is that he's going to be the starter, and you have to figure out what is the plan to get him ready, not only in the preseason, but for regular season play. And a lot of that will be determined on what he's able to show in minicamp. And even though we're not in pads, you can see the speed of the game and how he reacts and how he picks up stuff and how much they put on him mentally and how he's able to take it from the classroom to the field and execute. And the more that he shows that he's able to kind of take and really utilize and put into play on the field, the more we'll see them do and the more explosive that offense could be, because he have more options at his disposal.
Sure. And one of the guys flying under the radar at Cardinals rookie minicamp, Byron Murphy.
How about that?
Right? I mean, we're talking about a guy who could have been the first corner off the board.
Yeah, could have been.
Right?
Arguably should have been.
For some teams.
I thought he was the best corner when it came to being able to do everything. I thought Byron Murphy was the most complete corner in the draft.
There you go. And so, you know, they get two ones at a position. That's pretty good for a draft class. And then they go with three wide receivers there. I'll be interested to watch their impact moving forward. Jay Gruden impressed with Dwayne Haskins in Washington. And so the momentum for Haskins to be a day one starter, I feel like it's just going to continue to grow until we get to training camp. He might as well be the starter by day one of training camp.
I mean, it's definitely going to be a situation where the buzz is going to create a situation where it's going to be an open competition. And he talked about it being a competition where he's going to have an opportunity to compete for the starting job. Look, make no mistake about it. I'm a huge Dwayne Haskins fan. I thought he was talented. I thought he was the best quarterback in this class. I think he actually lands in a right situation, because the Redskins, unlike theirs on the Cardinals with Kyler Murray, the one thing that they have in place is they have a rock-solid running game. They have a number of running backs, Adrian Peterson. You get Darius Geis coming back. You have Chris Thompson, who is a dynamic change of pace back.
Right.
And then you have Bryce Love, who eventually will make contributions. Solid offensive line, so they'd be able to run the ball and throw play action. I think this team will have an opportunity to do some things. Now, they still have to build out and develop the receiver core and what they're going to be able to do. They have Terry McLaurin, but they also have high hopes for Trey Quinn. Trey Quinn, a guy who they took last year in the seventh round, who got on the field a little bit, flashed a little when he was coming out of high school. He was a five-star recruit, goes to LSU, ends up finishing his career at SMU. But he is a guy that can kind of work wonders from the slot. If he is able to do some of the stuff that Jamison Crowder was able to do, now with Jordan Reed, you're able to work inside out in the passing game. Maybe, just maybe, Dwayne Haskins can jump in and be comfortable as a rookie starter for a team.
Yeah, that's interesting. And look, we were talking about we're going to have a conversation here in a little bit with Jim Nagy, and I'm kind of curious to get his take on how the Falcons came draft class. Their first round really came together with Lindstrom and McGarry. I'll be interested to see what he has to say about those two guys, because they were both Senior Bowl guys. Any other rookie camps or rookies that were garnering some attention from you in the last couple of weekends here?
Well, no, like that's been the main thing. Yeah. Just watching those guys, watching the quarterback, seeing Daniel Jones spin it when he had an opportunity to spin it.
Yeah.
We want to kind of keep up with those guys. I think the big thing from a scout standpoint, when you get the rookie minicamp, you just want to make sure that your guys don't look out of place.
Right.
That when you have stood on the table, you vouch for somebody that they just kind of come in and look somewhat close to what they look like when you saw them on tape, and that you're not embarrassed by what they're able to put out on the field. And so it doesn't mean anything and everything, but it does kind of leave a lasting impression. That first impression goes a long way. And so you just hope that they show up, that they're coordinated, that they can walk and chew gum, and then maybe every now and then they can make a play or two to kind of validate their presence on the roster at this time.
Well, and look, I think it's a good point. So much so that, like, Adam Gase has opted not to have practices during rookie minicamp here with the New York Jets. I believe it was something he did in Miami as well. It's like, you know, and I kind of get it. I mean, you know, I think fans obviously want to see their guys out there, but why go out there and do it wrong when you can learn how to do it right?
You know, so it's funny. There are a couple of different things to that. I bumped into Kevin Demoff the other day. We were out and about in town. And he was talking about with the Rams, when they have rookie minicamp, they really don't have a minicamp. They have an orientation. They don't really do anything on the field. And part of that is due to all these guys are coming into camp at a different fitness level. All they've done for the last 3 or 4 months is prepare for the combine, prepare for private workouts. They are not yet in football shape. And so what happens, coaches can't help themselves. When a guy comes in, they want to put him on the field, and they want to go 100 miles an hour, and you end up having injuries. And so what some teams are opting for, let's go at a little slower pace. Let's be at teaching speed, which is a little more than walkthrough. Let's just kind of let them get figured out, do some individual drills, kind of show them this is how the pace of practice will be. Here's some of the things that we do in practice. So now when you come back for OTAs and veteran minicamp, you're now a little more acclimated to the way that we go about doing business, and you're a little better prepared to be able to operate in an environment without putting yourself at risk in terms of injury.
Yeah, I think it's kind of cool. I think it's an interesting piece. I think it's something I'd probably hate if I was a player. Mm-hmm. Like, let me get out on the field, right? Like, look,
try to protect them against themselves.
The meeting room is great, you know, but like, let's get out of the dark room and into the sunshine a little bit. Like, I get it, but I think it's something that for sure makes sense. A smart, sharp move that maybe we'll see kind of happen more and more often here
for sure
as we continue with these rookie mini camps. Okay, so let's continue the rookie conversation this way. By now, kind of, you know, look, I think we last time you and I were here, we talked about some of our favorite classes on the offensive, defensive side of the ball. Let's just talk about impact. So let's look at these classes in terms of what we're going to see from them in 2019, this season, and let's lay out our top five. I will give you the floor first here, Bucky.
Ooh, so, you know, obviously I'm going to be a bit of a homer. I'm going to go with the Green Bay Packers in terms of
that's not a homer, that's a class. A good class
that can really impact it. And it starts with Rashawn Gary and whatever they decide to do with him. I know they're going to stand him up and maybe play him outside a little bit. He's going to be a pass rusher in nickel situations. He should give them an immediate contribution as a pass rusher, even though they have Za'Darius Smith, they have Preston Smith. He'll be the third guy, but you can't get enough of those pass rushers that rotate in. And then Darnell Savage, someone who can come in the middle of the defense and really shore that up, give them kind of that difference maker, be it as a nickel safety, be it as a true safety, be it as someone that can come down and be in the box and make plays. And then the guy who I think is underrated, Elgton Jenkins.
I love that.
The center from Mississippi State, being able to come in and get a physical guy, because at the end of the day, they're going to be able to, they need to run the football. They have to run the ball. You're going to see Matt LaFleur do some of this outside, inside zone scheme, then kind of create big play action pass opportunities where you have to have guys up front that can move and make it happen. And then Jay Sternberger is kind of like an X factor as a flex tight end for them.
You know, I think the Elgton Jenkins point you made is really a good one, because I think year in and year out, if you look at the Green Bay Packers, they are almost entirely a homegrown offensive line. Mm-hmm. You rarely see anybody that they didn't draft start on their offensive line, and it's kind of starting to move that way a little bit. As I think they had a hole at right guard, they went out and addressed in free agency. So, you know, maybe that's a place where Elgton Jenkins can step in as well. Okay, where else are you going?
So I'm gonna go with the Baltimore Ravens after that.
Okay,
what we've seen with teams that have built around young quarterbacks, the first year they let the young quarterback play, the second year they build it up around the quarterback. We saw it happen in L.A. with Jared Goff. The second year, they go and get Robert Woods. They bring Brandon Cooks over. They upgrade the offensive line. Obviously, a new coach. They get better. The Philadelphia Eagles did the same thing. They upgraded the cast around. Carson Wentz, and he plays at a better level. Well, the Baltimore Ravens, they go and get Marquise Brown, they get a Miles Boykin, they get a Justice Hill. Speed, explosiveness, everything around them. When you're committed to playing this read option style of football that they're going to play with Greg Roman now as the offensive coordinator, they want to run the ball, they want to take advantage of the one-on-one matchups that they have on the outside, I think all of these rookies can get on the field. Marquise Brown can take the top off the defense. Miles Boykin is an explosive athlete. Justice Hill has big-time speed. They're going to take advantage of those one-on-one situations. And then to go and get Jalen Ferguson, not a surprise, because based on a conversation years ago with Ozzie Newsome, Ozzie Newsome always talked about sack production translating into pro performance. Jalen Ferguson, the all-time sack leader in FBS history, he joins the Baltimore Ravens in the third round. We'll see if he can be what Terrell Suggs was for them for years and years.
And Trace McSorley, I think, is a really interesting pick in the sixth round as well. See what they're able to do with him. Okay, so your number three class in terms of impact is?
Man, this is tough. So many different classes that we can go. Let's go to Buffalo Bills and what the Buffalo Bills were able to bring to the table.
Yeah.
Buffalo goes and get Ed Oliver. They get Cody Ford, Devin Singletary, and Dawson Knox. Those are their first pick, their picks from the first three rounds. All of those guys should be able to come out and carve out roles. Ed Oliver is the upfield pass rusher that they need, a difference maker at the point of attack, gives that defense a little more juice, and it kind of solidifies their identity. Cody Ford is a guy that can play tackle or guard. He protects Josh Allen, but also allows them to pave holes for their collection of running backs, Frank Gore, Shady McCoy. Devin Singletary is a young guy that jumps in that running back rotation. And then Dawson Knox gives them a guy that is really athletic, but is also a rugged blocker at the point of attack. At tight end, you're looking for that combo player. He is that. And so as they build this offense out around Josh Allen, you now have someone in the passing game that can work from inside out, but you also have a protector and a runner behind.
I like that. I like the Bills a lot. They might crack my top five as well. So your top two, here we go.
Here we go, top two. Let's go. Let's go with the Oakland Raiders right here. And the Oakland Raiders, everyone will talk about their first three picks. Farrell, Josh Jacobs, and then Jonathan Abraham. Foundational players, guys with great character, guys that are natural leaders, guys that were respected by their peers. Well, they're going to be part of the guys that changed the culture in that locker room. They're winners. They understand how to get it done. And to that point, Mike Mayock and the Raiders went and took a lot of guys from Alabama and Clemson, four guys that appeared in the championship game because – if you want to win, you need to get guys who know how to win, and they know how to win from the collegiate level. Those guys will make the sacrifices. And so I just think from that standpoint alone, they're rock solid, and they will make the immediate impact because those guys will start. And don't forget about Trayvon Mullen taking in the second round. Some people believe he could end up being the best corner in the class just because of physically what he's able to bring to the table.
All right, which means your top impact draft class.
Impact draft class. I'm going to go with the 49ers. Like and that. The reason the 49ers are at the top of the heap is because, look, Nick Bosa is going to be an immediate contributor. He's going to be able to give them a pass rusher that can get to the quarterback, his size, his toughness, his ability to win with technique or also win with speed and power. That's going to help them. But the versatile players they added on offense, Deebo Samuel, Jalen Hurd, those guys being able to do so many different things on the perimeter, be it a slot receivers, be it a playmakers on the outside, Jalen Hurd being able to be a wide receiver, a running back, maybe even a tight end. Kyle Shanahan is one of the more creative minds in football. To give him those kind of pieces allows him really to get in the lab and do some funky things with the San Francisco 49ers offense.
That's a good looking list right
Collect
there.
And miss. That's what happened. You let me go all five. I thought you were going to take some.
Five. I got five too.
Yeah,
I got five
too. Let me go first.
Here we go. All right. So I'm going to agree with you on a couple of them here, but my number five, one we're not talking about a ton, the New York Jets.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to go Quinnen Williams. Look, I mean, if he was the only player in your draft class, you might be on this list.
Oh, for sure.
Just because of impact.
Yes.
Up there with Leonard Williams. I mean, that is going to be a force, right? And look, I think, Jakai Polite probably didn't benefit from the run-up to the draft very much.
He did, but he's a good player.
Right.
Good player on tape.
Rotational pass rusher, you know, they need some of that over there in New York. I think that's why we thought they might go Josh Allen. But... you know, he's got an opportunity, is what I would say. An opportunity for impact. And then another guy we don't talk about a ton is Trayvon Wesco. We saw him at the Senior Bowl. And, you know, one of those tight ends, H-back kind of guys, right, that can kind of do it all there. I think Adam Gase will find the right ways to use him, will be an effective target, an effective piece of that offense for Sam Darnold in his second year. So in terms of impact, I think those guys have some opportunity to make some plays early on for the Jets. And so they get my number five nod. At number four, Minnesota Vikings. So look, Bradbury's going to start right away.
Oh,
right. Yeah. Somewhere. Right. I don't know whether he's center guard. He's going to start right away. I wouldn't be surprised if Drew Samia starts for them.
Oh, he fourth should. Round pick. Yeah, he definitely can get in the mix.
Big part of that offensive line that helped protect Baker Mayfield and Kyler Murray the last 2 years. And then Irv Smith, which is kind of almost forcing the hand on these Kyle Rudolph trade rumors.
Yes.
Which, I mean, Ian Rappaport says is not a rumor. He's on the trade block because they could not reach a deal on a contract extension. So those talks have broken off, and sounds like Rudolph might be on his way out. So if you want to talk about an opportunity for impact, it's Irv Smith right there. So those three guys, I think, could be immediate impact guys.
They can be immediate impact guys. I really like the Irv Smith pick. And what they're trying to create in Minnesota, when Gary Kubiak comes over, and he's not the offense coordinator, but he's heavy-handed in the involvement of the offense, the zone, the stretch, bootleg action that typically comes with it, some of the other play-action passes that come with that run game to complement it. Well, you need someone that can command it down the middle of the field.
Yeah.
Adam Thielen and Stephon Diggs on the outside. If you have a difference maker that can really make plays between the hashes, it allows that offense to go to another level.
It does. And look, Kyle Rudolph's been a really, really good player for the Vikings, especially down there in the red zone. Irv Smith feels like he's a little bit more of an explosive player in the middle of the field. So maybe they get a little bit of an upgrade on at least that piece of his game. At number three, you know, we talked about it last week a little bit, the Giants. I think, you know, immediate impact, we're not necessarily expecting that from Daniel Jones. But, you know, if we're talking about DeAndre Baker, we're talking about Dexter Lawrence, and we're talking about O'Shane Zimenez. And even if we go to Julian Love, you know, might get an opportunity there as well to mix it up in the backfield. So in the defensive backfield, rather. So, look, I think those three guys have an opportunity, you know, because this defense needs a lot of help.
No, it does need a lot of help, and they need it right away. But when you throw in, and we can't really count them in this draft class, but we can talk about Jabril Peppers and what
he's
do
a piece of it.
With him. He is a piece of that defensive puzzle, being able to move around and do some unique things. This defense could be better. Now, they're going to have to be simple to get those young guys on the field, but they need those young guys to be able to play and play well right away.
Right. Okay, so that brings me to my top two. I'm going right there with you with the Buffalo Bills. Look, the Bills are 26th in the league in sacks last year. Fastest way to the quarterback is right up the middle. Ed Oliver might end up being their best pass rusher this year.
Oh, for sure.
You know what I mean? Like, the most of their pass rushers are 30 or older. We're talking about Jerry Hughes, talking about Lorenzo Alexander. You know, Kyle Williams is gone. So, you know, I think that's a big piece of the puzzle there. Defensively, Cody Ford, I mean, terrific pass blocker, right? Allowed just one sack last year at Oklahoma. Josh Allen was sacked, I think it was second most sacked quarterback in the first half of the season last year. Now, things turned around. He started running the ball a ton, right? Maybe that slows down a little bit, and then also pass rush might slow down a little bit if you get Cody Ford into the lineup early, which I imagine they probably will.
Well, I think they have to get him in the lineup right away. This is a team.
Where do you think he goes? Because they had Deion Dawkins there at left tackle, right?
But I think they can put him over at the right side.
I think Cody on the right side.
Even though they signed those other guys in the offseason, I think they still can put Cody in the lineup. I think no matter how we shake it up, he's in the starting lineup, be it at tackle or at guard. But I think you want to make him comfortable. He's played right tackle, put him at right tackle, let him see if he can win the job. He doesn't, can kick him down inside.
Sure.
They have to make sure that they continue to build upon what they displayed last year. They displayed last year that Josh Allen can be a terrific threat as a dual threat in terms of his running ability, his running skills. They did some zone read things. They still need to get younger because, look, Shady and Frank Gore, two of the oldest running backs in the league, get a young guy that can make it happen. They have Devin Singletary. So let's see how they do it.
Awesome.
I like the way that they're trending because they got the right kind of guys. And Sean McDermott is really big on having the right composition, the right kind of chemistry and mix in the locker room. I think he has that with the guys that he brought in.
Yeah, I mean, he and Brandon Bean certainly seem to have formed a really nice tandem there together. And look, my top class, it'd go to Oakland. I don't think, you know, they were such a bad team last year. Those guys are going to have every opportunity to get in there. I'll just mention Foster Moreau as well. I feel like could be a guy that impacts them in some way, shape, or form, in addition to the guys that we're talking about as the foundational pieces. Quick honorable mention, you know, the Chargers are a really good team. So it's going to be tough for a rookie to come in and play right away, but especially on the defensive side of the ball. But Jerry Tillery up there, yeah. You know, rotational piece in the defensive line. Brandon Mebane's like 34 yes. years old. Corey Leggett's not there anymore. And then Nasir Adderley might be fun to watch.
He's going to be fun Derwin to watch. James, man, right? Nasir Adderley teaming up with Derwin James. You don't want to put these high expectations on them. But, man, we saw what Seattle was able to do with Earl Thomas and Cam Chancellor. Maybe, just maybe, it gives Gus Bradley an opportunity to kind of recreate what he once had in Seattle.
So just a little honorable mention there as we give our top five impact rookie classes.
I'm not going very far. I'm in a rush. It's too uncomfortable. Sometimes I just forget. Don't kid yourself. There's no such thing as a good excuse for not buckling up.
If you've used any of these excuses or others, you're putting yourself at risk of injury or death. In 2017, more than 10,000 people were unbuckled when they were killed in crashes. That's 51% of people killed in motor vehicle crashes that were not wearing seatbelts. No matter what kind of vehicle you drive, wearing your seatbelt is the best defense in a crash. Even when you sit in the back seat, you still need to buckle up. That goes for you when you ride taxis and use ride-sharing services too. Cops are on the lookout and writing tickets, so why take the risk? In 2017 alone, seatbelts saved nearly 15,000 lives.
So do the smart thing. Buckle up every trip, day or night. Click it or ticket.
All right, our pleasure now here as we continue this episode of the Move the Sticks podcast to welcome in the executive director of the Senior Bowl and, I mean, multimedia superstar.
Superstar.
Jim Nagy superstar. Is here with us. What's up, Jim?
How's it going, fellas?
Oh, great. We're doing really good, man. Thanks for having us. And or thanks for joining us here. And look, congratulations are in order. I mean, look, 93 players drafted from the Senior Bowl this year. That's the most I believe you guys have had in 5 years. So really good first class for you. You got to be proud of those guys, huh?
Yeah, I'm proud of those players because they came down and competed. I want to give all the credit to those players. So, yeah, we had 93. Our 10-year average over the last year was 83 over the last 10 years. So we were up. And we hadn't had 10 first-rounders since 2011, wow. Which we're really proud of. And the key number there was 56 juniors in the 2011 draft. And there was 144 this year. So we feel really good about the fact that, you know, a couple of those guys, Montez Sweat was probably going to be a first rounder anyway, whether he came here or not, and he chose to come down and compete. But you had a lot of guys like Caleb McGarry and Darnell Savage and, you know, Chris Lindstrom. I feel like a bunch of guys played their way into that first round. So, yeah, really, really proud of that class. And, you know, hopefully we can continue to build on it.
You know, Jim, it's funny, having been a Senior Bowl alum, I do remember the competition and how it was really a prestigious honor to be invited to the Senior Bowl. And I felt like being down there this year, I felt like some of that was back because it used to be the place where the best came to compete against the best. And I felt like this year gave us an opportunity to see the best guys compete, from the quarterbacks with Daniel Jones and Will Greer and some of the others there. How have you guys been able to elevate the Senior Bowl to get more of those guys to realize and recognize the value of competing amongst their peers?
Yeah, it's a great question, Bucky. I think there was a little bit of a mindset there for a while that if you came down to an all-star game, if you came to the Senior Bowl, you're almost saying you weren't going to be a first or second round pick. You kind of, you know, pegged yourself as more of a third, fourth, fifth, mid-round type player. So really just want to shift that mindset to, hey, to me, if you're the top player at your position, hands down, and it's unequivocal, and your head coach at the school is getting information from NFL people that you are the number one guy and you really have nothing to gain by coming to the Senior Bowl, I completely get it. And I've told agents that I won't push for guys that are in that category. But how many of those are there really? Like, even this year, as good a player as Josh Allen was, he could have come down here and been on the 49ers roster. You know, and sure. Nick Bosa didn't have that opportunity. Yes. And Rashawn Gary didn't have that opportunity. So he could have been down here for a week spending time with that Niner staff and really, you know, having them get a good feel for him. So, no, it's those guys all bought in this year that if you can even help yourself, you know, jump one guy at your position group, how much money is at stake just in making that one little jump. So, you know, to have guys that probably came in here as, you know, Terry McLaurin probably came down here, the receiver from Ohio State, probably came in as a fifth round pick and left a third round pick.
Yep.
And Titus Howard, the tackle from Alabama State, probably came down here as a third round pick and left a late first round pick. So the more examples we can use that way, I think the players are going to continue to buy in. And again, we engaged them this year on social media through my Twitter handle, which was really uncomfortable for me to jump in on social media this year. Totally different ballgame than working in the NFL, but it's something I felt like I had to do. So we would, you know, every time we were out at a game, we were shooting videos of them and posting them on the website or on our Twitter handle. And, you know, I just think it made a connection with the players and it's something they responded to. And hopefully we'll continue to build on that.
No question. You mentioned the 49ers. Four of their first five picks came from the Senior Bowl, which I thought was pretty cool, even though we didn't get to see Jalen Hurd compete. But I did want to talk about the quarterbacks. Seven of the eight that you had down in Mobile get drafted, and Tyree Jackson ends up signing with the Buffalo Bills, an undrafted free agent. Which of those guys do you feel like landed in the best spot, you feel like,
John? Yeah, you know, the best spot, I think they all ended in a good spot. I think Daniel Jones ended in an ideal spot with the Giants, you know, to be able to sit behind Eli for two years. And they've got a great relationship. They're similar players. I mean, Daniel's a better athlete, but they bring a lot of the same things to the table. I think Drew Lock going to Denver is a great situation. I know that, I mean, he personally would have been my guy. If I was drafting for a team, that would have been my pick, was Drew. I think that he's got the highest upside of any of those guys that were in this year's draft. But I know it hurt him to fall all the way to the second round. But to go to Denver and be surrounded with those people and have John Elway, I think that's a great situation for Drew as well.
You know, I want to go back to the Daniel Jones thing, because I believe there's kind of a misconception about Daniel Jones, because people, obviously on our side, people get kind of tied up with their own picks or whatever. Talk a little bit about what you saw from Daniel Jones the week that you had him, and why you believe not only are the Giants a great fit, but why he could be a much better player than people are giving him credit for.
Yeah, I feel like the unfortunate thing for Daniel was, you know, some of those quarterbacks, a couple of the other guys were just built up so much through the process that I think that fan base just had their heart set on a couple guys.
Right.
And it wasn't Daniel. But what, going back to your question, Bucky, what he showed during the week, he got better every day, you know, and I think that first day he was a little rattled out on the field. And I think John Gruden was chewing on those guys a little bit, trying to get them out of their comfort zone. And you can see that a little bit with Daniel that first day, you know, just getting in a huddle and spitting out verbiage and trying to command it, you know, a group of guys that you've never been around. That's a tall order. And, but what you saw from Daniel was every day got a little bit better. And then it culminated in the game where he was the MVP and he made plays with his legs in the game. He made a couple really nice plays with his arm. So that's all, I mean, any of these players, Bucky, you played in it that first day. I know as a scout, when I was working in the league, that I always gave those guys a little benefit of the doubt that first day, because there is anxiety, there is the nerves, and, you know, just everything's new. So that first day, I almost gave all of them a pass. But I want to see day two, day three in practice, make that jump and then carry that onto the game. And, you know, Daniel's got size. He's a good athlete. He's got a really good brain. He's extremely tough and he's accurate. Now, does he have the arm strength that some of those other guys did, you know, Dwayne Haskins and Drew Lock? No, he doesn't have that kind of arm. But he's got enough of an arm. You know, that's, we always use the term enough in scouting to refer to a lot of different things. But he's got enough of an arm and he brings so many other things to the table. Sitting behind Eli, I think the Giants will have a good player.
So you mentioned a couple of the guys. You mentioned Chris Lindstrom and Caleb McGarry. Really interesting scenario here. They both come to the Senior Bowl. They end up becoming friends at the Senior Bowl. From what I understand, they rode on the bus together. They'd sit and hang out and talk. And then they get drafted in the first round by the Atlanta Falcons and are now lining up right next to each other on the right side of the offensive line for the Atlanta Falcons. How did you observe those two that week and kind of how that, the uniqueness of where they ended up now with the Falcons?
Yeah, that was, to me, working on this side with the game, that was one of the cooler things the entire week, was seeing how that North offensive line group came together. Now, people have to understand that was an extremely talented group. I had guys in the league tell me that was the best all-star offensive line they've ever seen. So 9 of the 10 guys were drafted in the third round or higher off that North team.
Wow.
But they really, and you saw it on the field, they really came together. It was that practice on Wednesday out at the University of South Alabama where there were some scraps going on. I know LJ Collier, the Seattle's first round pick from TCU, he was getting into it with those guys pretty good. And to see those guys have each other's back, and they were all walking off the practice field as a group that day, and you could see the bonds that were already being formed. And when you're on the scouting side, you don't see that kind of stuff. So just to see that group come together in a short period of time was really cool. And then the Falcons put out a great video after the draft where Caleb and Chris were Caleb was coming off the team plane. It must have been one of Arthur Blank's Jets, and Lidstrom's waiting for him on the tarmac. And they, they give each other a big bro hug. And one of them, and I couldn't tell which one, said, "Man, we talked about this at the Senior Bowl." So that was a really cool moment that it kind of started for those two guys here in Mobile.
So it's funny you talk about it starting there in Mobile, but now that everything has gone past, we've had the Senior Bowl, we've had the draft. How do you start getting ready for next year? How soon does that process happen? And have you already started the process?
I see the big board back there.
Yeah, it's back there. It's a good question. We've started it, and I've got a lot of catch up to go. I've got two in-house scouting assistants that have been busting their tails for about 3 months now, really from the time our game was over, working on tape for next year. So we've got about 80%, 90% of the board done, probably somewhere in that area. With the FBS schools, we're going to have a lot of FCS stuff to do over the summer and smaller school stuff. Once those names start coming in from, my friends around the league that hit me up and help us out with the small school guys. But it's an ongoing process. And really right now, I'm trying to get jobs for our two scouting assistants in the league right now. They've been out interviewing with teams the last couple of weeks. The four former NFL scouts that I had on the road this fall helping us, two of those guys have already landed jobs with teams, and there's two more waiting to go through that interview process. So really trying to overhaul the football operation of this thing over the summer. But I've got a ton of catch up to play on this board. But I feel good. We're so far ahead of where we were last year in terms of getting – we didn't have this board up until August of last year. So to have all these names is we're at a much better starting point than we were a year ago.
Hey, Bucky and I were having an interesting conversation on the state of the Seahawks, obviously a place you both know very well. And we were talking about, the news, the officially, terminating the contracts of Cam Chancellor and Doug Baldwin, and, kind of that being, two more names from the Super Bowl era that are no longer there. Not just names, we're talking about like foundational players right there, Jim. So how do you kind of view the landscape that has changed now in Seattle and what that team looks like now?
Yeah, it's been a complete overhaul. And I think what John Schneider and Pete Carroll did and their staff, coaching and scouting, to get them to 10 wins last year in a year where they lost Mike Bennett and lost Cliff Averill and lost Richard Sherman. I mean, they've just lost all the cornerstones of those Super Bowl teams. But they did it. They won 10 games last year, and they feel really good about this year's draft class. But, with Cam and Doug, those two guys personify that team to me on both sides of the ball. Cam was really the quiet leader. He was the guy that in the locker room guys really looked to. He didn't really have to say a lot. I think he said a lot on game day and he spoke with his actions, and so he's going to be a vital piece of that thing. I know that Cam stayed connected with the team this year. He was on the sideline at a bunch of games. I hope that continues because he is such a big part of what they've done. And then Doug Baldwin, you talk about a team built with guys with chips on their shoulders. He had the biggest chip of all those guys. And the coolest thing was, he never lost it. He went undrafted, made Pro Bowls, got paid big money on a second contract, won a Super Bowl, and that chip still stayed on his shoulder. So and what Doug has done in the community, I'm excited to see where Doug Baldwin goes post-playing career. He would be a guy that if he got into politics nothing would surprise me. If he ran a Fortune 500 company, that's the kind of guy this guy is. And if you go back to everything that happened around the kneeling issue and some of the anthem stuff, some of the smartest stuff that came out during that time was from Doug Baldwin. Yeah. I mean, he's a voice the NFL should really look to keep involved in the league moving forward, because he's just a rare human being, and he's going to really be missed on and off the field in Seattle.
I can't let you go because you are one of the few people who has the unique perspective of seeing it from a couple of different organizations that are kind of polar opposites in my mind in terms of the way they do business. You spend the time in Seattle, but you also spent time with the New England Patriots. When you look at their draft and what they were able to do, it looked like to me they took a bunch of brand name players from big schools that have solid production. Is that something that is very, very common for the Patriots, or was this something that is kind of an outlier to how they approach the draft?
Well, you know, I think, first of all, I think they had one of the best drafts they've had in a long time. I really thought the Patriots did a nice job this year. I think that getting Jarrett Stidham in the fourth round from Auburn, the quarterback, I think, talk about another quarterback going into a great situation.
Yeah.
I think Jarrett's got starter potential and to be able to sit behind Tom for a couple of years. I know that in all my time in New England and even subsequent, there's been a lot of players like Brian Hoyer and Matt Castle, players move on. None of those guys are as talented as a thrower as Jarrett Stidham is. So that's you know, that's a really exciting pick for me. But, you know, like you talked about, Bucky, the production guys, the Chase Winoviches from Michigan, I mean, they added a bunch of good football players through the mix. And the unique thing about scouting for Seattle is that if a guy can do one thing well, you just need to bring that to the table and explain that to the coaching staff and Coach Belichick better than anyone in the league. If a guy can do one thing well, he'll find a role for that guy. So that was the fun part about working there, is really just hone in on what role can this guy play for us. And you were confident the coaching staff could get that out of him. And I know that, you know, there's some places that, around the league that you can't say that about. But if you just find that one thing, and I think that their staff found a bunch of guys that can fill roles right away. And I thought they really nailed it this year.
Well, Jim, you know, I thought it was really cool also, in addition to, you know, talking about the guys that you had get drafted, talked about some of the guys that you wish you might have had at the Senior Bowl that ended up going fairly high. We talked about a few of them went to Seattle. But look, I'm not going to say it was your miss. I'm going to say it was the league's miss. Cannot believe Dan Godsell went undrafted. Cannot believe it, Jim. Talking about the best long snapper in football, and he goes undrafted. I thought that was a tremendous job of scouting by you.
Little Hoosier love for you. Yeah, we got it.
A lot of Hoosier.
We had three of our four kickers drafted.
That's so great.
I was happy about that, but I did. I was hoping the snapper would go too.
Well, look,
we got to get better there next year. We got to get better.
No, I thought you did a great job. Look, man, we love watching you on TV, and we'll be following the social media this fall. And look, I hope to see you this summer at the Manning camp again, all right?
I hope I get the invite. Well, I loved it last year. That was a blast.
It was great. You got anything else, Buck? You good?
No, I'm good to go. That's my guy.
All right, Jim.
We're going to have to bring you back.
Yeah.
Got to bring you back, Jim.
Come on.
Yeah, well, whenever, man. Hopefully we get this board finished up and we can talk about it.
Sounds great, man. Thanks so much, Jim. We appreciate it, bud.
All right, guys. Thanks.
I love it, man. I felt like I was back in the Seattle Seahawks draft room
over there.
You guys let me in. It's fun.
Looked behind the curtain.
Getting to chat with Jim Nagy a little bit. Look forward to seeing what he puts together for the Senior Bowl here coming up in 2020. As we get into 2019, let's talk about guys transitioning from their rookie year to their second season in the NFL. So breakout players this year that have their rookie year already under their belt. So heading into year two, let's go offensive and defensive. Who's a guy that you think could break out as a second-year player on offense?
Okay, so now all the fantasy people are going to take me to
town. Yes!
And I'm okay with it.
Please.
Royce Freeman, running back from the Denver Broncos, is one to watch. And I know Phillip Lindsay.
What? Phillip Lindsay
had 1,000 yards and all that other stuff. But I'm telling you right now, Royce Freeman is going to be the bell cow back for the Denver Broncos. They want a bigger, more physical presence. Royce Freeman is going to be the runner. And based on the way that offense has produced 1,000-yard runners in the past, keep an eye on Royce Freeman coming out of Oregon. He's big. He's physical. Can catch the ball out the backfield. He can do a lot. I'm just hearing that he can play a major role for the Broncos, and I wouldn't be surprised if he is the starter when the season kicks off.
Look, we did not plan this, Bucky. We did not sit out here.
Is that somebody that you had?
And it is not, but I'm going to stay right there in the Denver offense, and I'm going to talk about Cortland Sutton a little bit.
Oh,
you know,
that?
Look, I think he's going to have a ton of opportunities this year, and I think Joe Flacco is really going to love having that big body available to him, even though they did get Noah Fant, and he'll be certainly a factor in the red zone. But look, we called him 60-40, not 50-50, right? Jump balls are 60-40 when Cortland Sutton goes up. He had 704 receiving yards last year as a rookie. I think he cracks the 1,000-yard mark this year.
You think he hits 1,000?
I think he goes for a K.
Ooh.
For sure. For sure. Maybe even doubles up on the touchdowns from 4 to 8.
Wow.
Let's go. Come on.
Shoot, man.
SMU in the house.
SMU is really, really in the house.
They are.
I can't go with the Mustangs, but I can go with a Buckeye who is playing in his home state. How about Sam Hubbard from the Cincinnati Bengals?
That was my guy too. Oh, there's your guy. I love it. We're on the same page, man. There's
your guy. Look,
tell
Sam,
me about him.
Sam Hubbard had 6x last year, but I believe they got a steal in the draft a year ago when they got him. He's athletic. He's explosive. He is technically sound. And playing in a new defense, I think he gets more opportunities.
I
think he gets a chance to start. Year two, I think he gets double-digit sacks and becomes a guy that we talk about as a household name, as a pass rusher.
I think that's a terrific pick right there as Sam Hubbard. And I'm going to give you another one. First-round pick from last year for the Miami Dolphins, Minkah Fitzpatrick.
Ooh, look at you.
So, you know, Brian Flores comes over from New England. Where, you know, I'm not saying they're the same player, but Devin McCourty was, I mean, a foundational player for the Patriots for the last 9 years.
Yes.
And I think he knows what kind of impact a player like that for your defense can be. And I think Minkah Fitzpatrick, you know, in even if they're not playing the exact same style, you know, as a safety, but I feel like he's got an opportunity to really be a guy that that they look to as a cornerstone there for, on defense. And he played really well last year, I felt like, for the most part as well. So I'm going to talk about, I didn't think Minkah Fitzpatrick could have a breakout season in his second year, but his first with Brian Flores as a head coach.
Well, I think there are a couple of things with Brian Flores and what you know about him and based on his experience in New England. They like smart players. They like versatile players that they can kind of use in a variety of different ways each and every week based on what they need in the game plan. Minkah Fitzpatrick is a guy that can play corner. He can play nickel. He can play safety, both safeties, meaning free or strong in the box or deep. And so he gives them a lot of variety and versatility. So I can see him breaking out as they begin this build, this defense around the talents of their best players.
Well, there it is. Breakout sophomores. And that is going to do it for us on this edition of the Move the Sticks podcast here. Fun getting to talk with Jim Nagy. Appreciate him hanging out with us. And we are back next week as well. Of course, we've got a ton of YouTube content out there for you. We'll have some more interesting YouTube content coming up here that I think you're really going to like that relates to Marshawn Lynch. That'll be coming soon. And then, of course, download Move the Sticks podcast, iTunes, wherever you watch. Download. Subscribe and leave a review, and we're always nfl.com/podcast. Where are you off to next, Buck? What do you got? Anything else coming
up? I'm just hanging. I think you know, I'm just coaching to high school.
We got summer workouts going on yet, or
we got summer workouts. We're in the middle of spring ball, so
we're in the middle of spring ball.
Yeah, we're in the middle of spring ball. We're trying to get it together.
Okay,
trying to get it together. So, but it's a lot of fun, but. Look, man, just trying to spin ahead. Going to start looking at some of the 2020 prospects and that stuff. So it should be fun. What about you? What we got going on?
I got a little I'll be back later this week for a little Total Access.
What happened to that long vacation?
Maybe July. Maybe yeah, July we'll get a little
a
bit of
time. Vacation that you're supposed
to. Maybe we'll do that then. I don't know. Yeah, I'll be back in here next week with DJ, I believe, because you get a breather.
Just a little break. A little week.
Good. Take some time. Hey, thanks for hanging out with us here today. We'll catch you next week on Move the Sticks podcast.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring body wash and bar soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.